Anderson, Delroy.
Oh, okay, yeah, he's sounding good. So, maybe it was Jim. Maybe his antenna was pointed in the wrong direction. So, KD2BHC Jim, if you're still out there, you're next on our little list. So, please, hit that push-it-off button.
Good evening, Roy. This is KD2VHD. I wanted to bring up a conversation that's technical, and it's also very ham-related. And it may be philosophical and principle-wise about the fee. It's just been decreed. It was decreed some time ago, but they're going to impose it. And I was a little disappointed we didn't have a little more conversation on it. I'd like to add a couple thoughts.
Sure, Jeff. Please.
So in the format of a question, because that's what we usually do here, I assume, are we talking about, when we talk about this fee, is it a question of a magnitude or a principle? The fee is insignificant. The magnitude is insignificant. It's really not that totally insignificant compared to what we spend on this game we play. But is it about what we do here a representation of a right or a privilege? Can I propose that it's become a right, turned into a privilege, turned into a royal decree of permission? I'm not okay with it. Since 1912, the Radio Act of 1912, our government has kicked us off usable frequencies at the time. 1912, when amateur radio was invented by regulators, they literally kicked the people off of any usable frequencies that existed. And now we're fiddling with a dime toll, as most of us might recall, thrown in the basket. I don't have any answers for this. I'm not saying I had the way, but I was a little disappointed that that wasn't the topic of conversation from the start of the TechNet tonight, because it's deep, it's heavy, it's real. And I'll leave it at that and put it up to discussion. Thank you, Roy.
AC2GS. Well, you know, I mean, I don't want to get this into a libertarian discussion of whether it's a privilege or a right. You know, driving a car is not a right. It's a privilege. You have to take an exam, and you have to pay the Department of Motor Vehicles. And if you have a car, you have to demonstrate that you have insurance coverage. So it's certainly not a right. And since the very beginning of regulation of amateur radio, it has also not been deemed a right, but a privilege. You have to take an exam for it. You have to pay a fee usually. It's only the last, I don't know, 20 years, probably less than 20 years, where the FCC just figured out that it cost them more money to collect the fee than they got from the fee. So they figured that in the end they made more money by not asking for any money. And that situation changed last year. They decided that $50 for a license renewal was reasonable. The ARRL pleaded to decrease it, and they decided to decrease it to $35. So I don't know of anyone, I'm sure there are guys out there of a somewhat libertarian leaning that feel that it is a right and that we offer a service to the community. And that was part of the plea that the American Radio Relay League had at the time, was that we're an extra communications capability for the country in case it needs us. So I'll be interested to find out if other people feel that they should have a free license because it's I don't know if I'd phrase it a God-given right to operate on frequencies of radio waves.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich.
You know, unfortunately, ham radio operators have become less
as important as communications all the way from police calls has become more and more ubiquitous. And therefore, I don't think that argument can be made much anymore that we provide a necessary service. I know, stories like with Katrina and other catastrophes, ham radios play a part, but I don't know if they play a critical part anymore, and therefore don't know whether that argument can be made.
Well, yeah, I mean, and unfortunately, I think the dirty secret is the federal government kind of feels that they have enough professionals in the communication system. Amateurs require a questionable amount of supervision. Otherwise, some people take too much responsibility, some people fail to coordinate, and we've heard kind of secondary rumor-like stories of hams that rushed to Puerto Rico and such, where it was kind of a small series of disasters. So, yeah, I guess so. But again, the curious aspect of trying to figure out what is a right and what is a privilege. I think if you ask any kind of average guy out there who doesn't have any interest in amateur radio, they probably wouldn't even know why we were asking that question. I don't think it's the kind of follows from A to B that access to spectrum, because so much depends upon RF, and if you veer into the wrong band, you could disrupt all kinds of services. So I think you would probably get a large group of people saying, yes, it's our right to operate on any frequency at any time without any license or so. So I realize that I'm taking it to its absurd where it comes to just a licensing fee. You know, everything has a licensing fee these days. The government always gets a cut of everything. I can't practice medicine unless I pay my license fee. There's a lot of things we have to do that, you'd kind of think your profession would be, your profession, but not. If you don't pay your license fee, it's not your profession anymore.
KD2FIU, George.
Yes, George.
In a patriotic stance, I believe it has to be not just a right, it has to be a privilege. Because we have to have complete organization of the airwaves as determined 120 years ago when it began. Or even probably before that. Yes, it was a little before that. And as radio or RF as a energy mode to communicate was evolving. Can you imagine listening to the weather on an AM radio station and a 500,000 watt station at an island in the Atlantic or the Pacific just wipes it out and changes it for you? No. Can you imagine if somebody in a mountain up in New York State did that to you? No. We are privileged for this. We should be monitored. We should be licensed. We should be tested. Because we're part of a civilized, organized way of doing it for our satisfaction and our protection.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
I think ham radio is dependent on certain kinds of technology. And I think they're all pretty much antiquated, but I like it anyway.
You too, BZ?
Yes, Rich. By the way, I don't think I quite call amateur radio technology antiquated. It is the basis for still a lot of communication. There are new inventions, the software-defined radios I'm a big fan of. There's different types of modulation, primarily for increasing symbol rates and bandwidth that's seen on cell towers, quadrature amplitude modulation and such, but I still think there's a little bit more use for single sideband and CW and RDI and PSK31 still around. But please, go on.
I like it. The $15, not from zero to $35, because if they went to $15, we wouldn't be having this discussion. And another 2-3 years down the line, they could have gone to $35. It would have lessened the impact that it's having now.
KD2FIU, George.
It is, but I like it.
DK.
Okay, a whole bunch of people. So we'll take it first with Rich, then with George, and then with John. So I just want to say that the FCC was sort of heavy-handed way back. They kind of said, hey, you guys, we're not charging you. We charge everyone. Why are we not charging you? Let's see. $50. That sounds good. So I don't think they were planning it like a marketing kind of thing, where they kind of sneak the price up to you. But they just kind of smack you in the face with it and say, yeah, we want $50. And, I guess maybe they thought that if different people would yell and scream enough, they would drop it down to the 35 that it became. So I don't think there's any marketers in the FCC. I think it's just a bunch of lawyers and engineers. But let's go down the list. Rich first, and then we'll get to George and John. Rich, W2BZ, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you heard me before, but they should have brought it up to $15 and then another 3 years or what, up to $35, not this big a jump. Also, I wonder how much does it cost now to take a test? If you want to take, well, it says if you upgrade, there's no fee, but let's say you're just going in for your general right away. I wonder what that costs to do. And I was also wondering if anybody knew what a hunting license cost, or a fishing license, or a captain on fishing excursion boat. You know, how much do those licenses cost? I don't know.
WB2NY2H.
Okay, this is going to be a long list. I just want to mention that the VE exams are not designated by the FCC. They are determined by the VE organization. The ARRL charge is $15. They have no plans at present to change that. There are other VE teams that charge nothing. So for them, they remain free. The only thing that is being brought on board is the licensing fee for renewals, new licenses, and changes of a call sign for vanity's sake and such. So that if you upgrade from a general to an extra, they don't charge you anything. But if you start out, you get a tech license, or you want a vanity plate, that costs you the $35. I don't know. We now have kind of nested comments, so I'm going to try my best to stay in the nest and not upset too many people. So I think Ed wanted to make a comment based on Rich's comment. So, Ed, what's your comment?
KD2FIU.
So excited. Let me go first.
Okay, George, you're an enthusiastic man, but you got to calm down occasionally. Got to give your blood pressure time to go back to normal. But, George, what would you like to say?
/128/78, and it's doing well. The topic was over whether or not it was a privilege or a right. It is a privilege, and we have to continue that in thought. $15, $25, $35. Does that make it $1.50 a year, $2.50 a year, $3.50 a year? Big deal. Get over it. But we should have people that are in our corner who work with us, like the ARRL, and I'm not saying that they are the best organization in the world. They're a great organization. Could always use improvement. However, we don't want things to get out of control with the FCC charging us way too much. It shouldn't be $500. It went to $35. Thank you, ARRL. But it is still a privilege and not a right. And we have every right to contribute to that privilege, to make it beneficial. And yes, ham radio is still very, very important. Short wave is still very, very important. We have not seen what ham radio operators can provide at times of disaster very recently. We have not seen the level of disaster that can occur. We are well equipped from many police departments and many civilians who are licensed to take our back. And we are part of those civilians who will take the back of people who want to be patriotic and protect this country. So if the original topic was, is it a right or a privilege? It's a privilege because we have a privilege to serve.
VHD coming.
Yes, Jim, you started this, so why not?
A great discussion. I know it might be uncomfortable for some, but I think it's prescient. It's excellent. So is it a right or a privilege? It's a good question. I think the epitome of a government regulation of something is a traffic light. It determines not who can drive, what they can drive, but whose turn it is. I think it's a very important reference to this discussion. It's more complicated than that. I don't propose that answers all the questions. Not at all. But the powers that we're talking about here are the powers of the people, not the powers of the bureaucracy. And I think us discussing this here is most important. And I'm sorry if that upsets somebody, people's sensibilities, but I think this is the place to discuss this, and it should not be disregarded. So I'll listen to input as long as it takes. KG2VHD. KG2RY.
Okay, I will put you on the list, David, which is growing longer and longer and longer. You doubled with John, AD2DK, and he's next on the list. So, John, what would you like to say about this?
Well, Roy and the gang, you know, it just seems to me that, you know, it's a bit of a money grab, right? I mean, taxes go up every year, and we get less and less for it. And, I mean, right now I'm involved with Civil Air Patrol, and I'm involved with one of the local radio clubs, and I'm trying to, you know, get many of the cadets who are, you know, 12 and older interested in ham radio. And, you know, at $15, I could see a lot of parents shelling out the fee you know, after we arrange for training for the cadets. But $35, you know, it's it might be a bit of a stretch, especially for a kid who's married to his cell phone and doesn't appreciate what ham radio could offer him or her. And, you know, we're having enough difficulty right now bringing new talent into the fold, and the fee is just going to make that more difficult. I have no problem paying $35. In fact, for what ham radio brings to me, I would spend $35 a year or, you know, a quarter. But, you know, trying to keep this this hobby going is very challenging, and you know, we need all the help we can get, and increased fees, especially when, you know, I would bet money that there is decreased labor involved in administering amateur radio licenses in light of computers and automation and doing things over the web, that there's less labor involved, but yet they want to charge more. So that's my take on it. Back to the net.
Okay, John, thank you for your input. You have to keep in mind that, you know, again, unless you go to a place like the Laurel VEC exams, which are free, you got to tax the $15 on top of the $35, and now it's costing you $50 to get your tech license. Which, you know, I mean, amateur radio operators generally are not known for their tendency to throw money away. They really want to get value for each dollar that they spend. So, I don't know. I guess I'm old enough and cranky enough to think that kids that can easily spend $85 on a new video game probably have $50 of discretionary funds to get a license if they're so inclined. But I would prefer if they didn't do that fee-wise. Or if they brought the fee up slowly, like Rich suggested, they're not going to make a lot of money from us. There's only about 750,000 amateur radio operators in the United States, and this payment plan just goes into, you know, it's going to take 10 years before every one of them has to pay up. So. I think it was more of the principle of the thing on their part. I think they would like to minimize the amount of effort they put into amateur radio in general. I don't think they really spend too much time. They have a lawyer, Laura, that kind of oversees everything. And the database is just kind of run for the whole system, so it doesn't really add any particular expense. Up until last year, they decided that getting payment was more nuisance than worth. And it may return to that someday. You never know. Anyway, next on the list of people who would like to say something about this is Ed, WB2EAV.
Yeah, I threw out my call when the question was, how's that affected? The answer is, it does not affect it at all, which you've already brought up. But let me add, the new fee does not get involved with the DE session at all. It's handled directly with the FCC when they finish their processing. Then, instead of getting an email about your new license, you get an email with an invoice. And you don't get the license until you enter the payment. So it doesn't affect the DE process at all. Right?
Okay, I agree with you. It's a separate entity entirely. As per numerous emails I got from the ARRL, since I'm a VE myself, so I'm on the list, and I get these notifications that at the level of the VE exams, absolutely positively nothing has changed. You collect the $15, which is what the ARRL wants to be, and then you send them off to the FCC ULS site and let the FCC figure out how to extract the $35 from them. By the way, we've been having some weird intermittent problems with Echolink again, that it drops the audio, and now it's brought it back online again. So I'm sorry for the guys who are missing out during the gap. You can try the audio stream. That doesn't have that problem, but, you know, you're trying our best here. Anyway, so I agree with you entirely, Ed.
Boy, I heard Frank in there, by the way.
Yeah, I think Frank was trying to figure out what was wrong with the audio feed, because that's usually why he does that, because he doesn't think he's connected, and we hear him because of a timeout issue with Echolink. I think the timeout has to be extended in some way. But just in case Frank had a question that was related to what we were talking about, let's drop the repeater for more than a few seconds and give him an opportunity if he wants to.
WB2BX, so I was mainly raising the Echolink issue, but I do have a comment. If you'd like, go ahead.
Sure, Frank. Please, share it with us.
Okay. The license fee actually is mandated by Congress in legislation, I believe in 2018 or 2019, that the FCC has to impose fees. And I believe it applies to all services, not just amateur radio. I doubt the FCC could care less, because while I don't know the legislative language, I suspect the money goes to the Treasury, and it's up to Congress to appropriate money to the FCC. If somebody knows the legislative language, they're welcome to correct me. So that's the origin of the fees. And when you think about it, Ham spends thousands of dollars on radios and antennas, $35, as you say, $350 a year for a $10 license, is annoying but not exactly exorbitant. Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, yeah, I've heard something along those lines. The problem is, although some AMs are willing to spend a lot of money to build and maintain their shack, there are some guys that just kind of weaved it together with secondhand stuff that they bought and repaired, and really don't want to spend any money, if at all humanly possible. So I kind of understand that. I don't know where the $50 came from, except that it's a relatively nice round number, and I'm glad at least that the ARRL was able to talk them into going down to $35. And I'm exceedingly happy that they delayed the inevitable until after I had to renew my license, so I don't have to worry about this nonsense for another 9.5 years.
Do you think that this is possible?
That what is possible, David?
That the FCC is not really taking ham radio so seriously, you know, that they don't think we're important enough to be considered side by side with FCC. So that, you know, they think, well, these are a bunch of people, they're having lots of fun at field day, and they're doing this and that, and they're using old radios, whatever. And I guess, you know, to the FCC, you know, the emergency work and the technology and all, perhaps it isn't so important to them.
KD2FIU input, Roy, did you hear from NY2H? He was on the list.
Yeah, Lou is next on my list. I just want to comment on David's comments, and then we'll get to Lou, and then you right after Lou. I don't think the FCC has really cared much about amateur radio, unfortunately. I know we care a great deal about it. I think ever since the old days when they kind of dropped the entire idea of FCC exams for for the hobby and kind of handed it out to volunteer people. It was an indication of their general disinterest. Like I said, as far as I can perceive, they maintain one lawyer who answers the emails. If you complain about something or someone in amateur radio, she's very pleasant. I've dealt with Laura a few times, but I don't think the FC really cares. I think if we all kind of disappeared into the mist, I don't even know if they would notice for a couple of months. So that's my take. Maybe it's a pessimistic one, but let's try and continue this list in order. Lou, NY2H.
Thank you, Roy. My first comment was, think about it, it's less than a penny a day, less than 1 cent per day. What do you get for that one penny? Or less than a penny, what do you get? Well, despite what you're saying about Laura, I believe we had a jammer incur a fine, multiple thousands of dollars. So, in a sense, we have some order, almost like law and order, if you look at it that way, as opposed to anarchy. I mean, let's say we didn't have licensing and no one was around to enforce anything, things would be much worse, in my opinion. So we do get some value back from that. As far as bringing it up slowly, starting with 15 and then going to 35, well, you'd have to start with 15, wait 10 years, and go to 35 for everybody to see that small effect before the larger effect. I mean, if you did 15 for 2 years, but I'm not up for, say, 4 years, I'm still going to get hit with 35 from zero. So I don't know that that's the solution. But, they probably don't care. I mean, what is care philosophically? Do they care about us? I don't know. Well, it's administrative. But we care about us. And I think we do get some benefit back for that penny.
Okay, to a degree, yeah, I agree with you. The monitoring stations, the trucks and such, are not solely for amateur radio-related problems, but any kind of FCC frequency violations, and even the number of trucks that they used to have, I think they shrunk them down to, I think there's now two mobile trucks that travel throughout the United States. I don't know what happens if you're in Hawaii or Alaska. It's like anything in the government. I mean, they try and do as best they can, but all things being equal, do they always kind of think of us first, second, or third? I won't even call us the redheaded stepchild, because I think we're kind of below the redheaded stepchild. We're the redheaded gerbil, the family pet, if you will. But yeah, I guess maybe I'm just cynical.
Well, I mean, I think we had a conversation in terms of some of the readiness or apparent readiness and contributions that ham radio might or might not be able to do in a real disaster. So, I mean, we shouldn't take it personally. It is what it is. And we're a band of brothers and sisters, let's say, so we will keep our interests and have the ARRL as one of our representatives, let's say, and keep them pushing for us and do what we can. You know, everything is politics. So I don't expect, I mean, you know, we're not going to be as high as public service. I mean, that's nonsense. We're not going to be as high as all the money games, all the carriers and with mobile carriers and all that. That's really where the action is. I mean, money talks. Nothing to do, right? NY2H, back to that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And all things being equal, I would prefer benign neglect Because, you know, if they actually had an accountant in there that figured out how much they could sell off our bandwidth to someone, they could probably make a nice bit of change doing that, more than the licensing fees. So, you know, I think it's good to get it off our system, out of our system, and discuss it. You know, again, thankfully, I have to wait 9.5 years before I have to pay in again because they delayed the inevitable, which I'm sort of glad of. But, you know, if it costs me $35 to stay in this hobby is certainly worth $35 plus. So that's the way I see it. George, you wanted to make a comment as well.
KD2FIU, thank you, Roy. And as I said earlier, $3.50 a year. That's not a lot. And think about it. You know, we have the most robust telecommunications networks and telecommunications services to date that we've ever had. Any openings or breakdowns of those regionally or even in pocketed areas or in larger than regional areas, we're there. They know that. It's like people who have in America, in the United States of America, we have this privilege to serve ourselves and serve others. And this is part of it. It's not that the FCC is ignoring us. You know, just maybe we called on them enough times with interference where they said, hey, you gonna start paying for this? Yeah. But just keep in mind that we did not have this control, how much interference would be going on. $3.50 a year, maybe $7 a year if you want to change your call sign. Not a lot. Not a lot. KD2FIU. But I don't want it to be $500 a year. Bye.
Okay, so, you know, it's like the old adage about everyone having a price, and I understand that. Again, I think for some people it's the principle of the thing more than the amount, and I understand the principles are important, and you should be aware of principles, and when principles are misconstrued or redefined and what have you. So I hope we kind of chewed on that a bit, Jim. Anyone else with any closing comments before we call this particular topic done and did?
Yeah, NY2H. You know, it reminds me of the folly of defund the police. That's so ridiculous. And, you know, I think there's a parallel here.
PhD was a different parallel.
Okay, Jim, what's your other parallel?
Thank you all for engaging in the conversation. I appreciate that. The parallel I'll throw out there is the dime in the little net that in the toll booths from years ago. Throw a dime in, what difference does that make? The cost is insignificant, what they're proposing. It's meaningless. It's literally nothing. We spend more on an antenna and a beer or a cup of coffee than what they're talking about. The number is nothing. But it's about, are we talking about who gets to talk or whose turn is to talk? I'll leave it at that. Please move on to another discussion. I thank you all for your time.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George. Before you start, I just want to make a comment that thankfully, other than people who break rules, I have not heard much in the way of people having their license revoked just on their philosophical belief system. You know, the biggest neo-Nazi in the world, as long as he behaves by FCC rules and regulations, can be duly licensed to operate amateur radio equipment. So at this point, at least, I don't think the question is whether the FCC is going to censor people. But that's the way I see it. George, what do you want to say?
KD2FYU, yes. The dime in the telephone was prior to 1971, and it did mean something. You were paying for the call, and you were paying for the equipment that was out there on the street for you. Keep in mind, at that time, an average cost in a municipality to ride a bus was 15 cents. Should they have eliminated that? I don't think so. And by the way, in 1969, 70, and 71, the cost of a slice of pizza was 15 cents. Should they have eliminated that? Wow. None of these people would have been able to grow. KD2FYU.
Okay, George, I think we're entering a land of non-equivalents. Because things were inexpensive, because we've dealt with a lot of inflation over the last 50, 60 years. That's 15 cents was a lot of money back then. People had to work hard for that 15 cents. So we're kind of talking apples and oranges, and I think Jim's example, unless I missed it entirely, was the toll bridges, which are a little bit weirder and more annoying. When toll fees came into effect, the promises at the time were that they were going to pay off for the construction of the bridges and then the tolls would stop. And instead, what just happened is toll bridges are a means of getting a significant amount of money into the coffers of the government. Again, the FCC is not going to make anything off of our payments. There's not enough of us to profit. Probably the cost of collecting the money, it will almost break things even with them. So I'm not quite sure whether the cost of a call or a pizza is the best representation for escalating governmental kind of playing games with us.
KD2FYU. Roy, a comment was just made that the dime to be put into the public telephone was not about the cost of the call, it was about a discipline to do it. And that is not the case. I made reference to back what it was in 1970 era, where it was part of a cost that had value at the time. And I don't know if you heard the original comment, so I'll let it go, but I was trying to put into perspective that throwing a dime in the call prior to 1971 meant that availability to make that call was there.
AC2GF. Okay, George, I did not hear that particular comment. I thought, again, the toll prices were probably the best example of government kind of fibbing to us. But if that's what was thrown out, I agree with you. I think we are paying the dime was for the services, the infrastructure, and repairing the infrastructure regularly. Those things always broke. So very good. Next on our list, Rich, W2BZ. What's your question for tonight or your comment for tonight, Rich?
I just have a quick one, Roy. Is copper tape a much, 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 much better insulator than tin foil would be? And if so, why?
How are you using the term insulation? Because copper is a conductor, so I'm not quite sure what you mean.
As in coating my SDR box with it, that it's a great little receiver, it's an amazing little receiver, but there's absolutely no, when I say insulation, you know, I'm talking about protection from any kind of noise. There's no noise protection at all in this plastic box, so I thought of lining it with copper tape, But also, that brought up the question, you know, is copper tape that much better than plain old tinfoil?
Okay, so it's not really insulation, it's more isolation. You fundamentally, you want to build a Faraday cage. I think, although tinfoil, although called tinfoil, is actually mostly aluminum, it has enough conductivity that, if, you know, depending upon the thickness, won't give you that much poorer a Faraday cage than the much, much, much more expensive copper foil. So I would just put a couple of layers of tin foil and call it a day.
Yeah, that's what I thought of. I just have to watch about shorting something out, but I would have to, if there's even a quarter inch or a half inch left of unprotected plastic, should I say, let me put it that way, can enough RF sneak in and out of there to make it not worthwhile doing it? Or does, you know, does it have to be every square millimeter of the inside of this receiver has to be taped up?
Well, you'll get better isolation with the more percentage surface area you cover up. If you can't, and most people can't cover every square millimeter, I don't think you should get overly concerned. If you get an additional, you know, 20 decibel of isolation, that's knocking down the RF by 100-fold. You know, that should suffice, I think. So I wouldn't worry about the details there.
All right, that was the question, Roy. Thanks.
Okay, very good, Rich. Next on our list is David, KG2RY.
Good evening, good evening. Hope you're having a fantastic night. Just going back to that last question, I wanted to say, FCC doesn't care about ham radio. They don't see ham radio the way that we do. And ham radio is very important, and it's a fantastic hobby. You can get a lot out of it, and you can make the world a better place by communicating with other people. Drop. Yeah, so we discussed this earlier on the 10-meter net for the KCRC. We talked about a Bluetooth interface adapter converter for ICOM IC718. Could you give me an idea of how this thing works, you know?
Well, I, just for the audience, David is alluding to, I'm a member of two clubs, of obviously Limark here, and the Kings County Radio Club. Kings County Radio Club has a number of nets as well, and most of the time I'm the net control operator for the 10-meter net on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock on 28.380 upper sideband. Anyone out there who's interested, you don't have to be a club member, check in. We're doing it to keep 10 meters alive. Getting back to David's question, he showed me a product coming out of China. It looks to be a small Bluetooth transceiver module with two connectors. One is a DIN-like connector that probably feeds into the breakout connectors on the back of ICOM. The other is an eighth of an inch or something like an eighth of an inch. A phone connector, something with two rings and a shield and tips. And my guess is it just connects with the input-output and probably the push-to-talk. And with Bluetooth that are capable of triggering the push-to-talk, and there are some headsets that are capable of doing that, it'll function as a remote headset. So if it doesn't have that capability, You know, if you try and hook it up to, say, something like a Apple product, where I don't think you can set it up to trigger the push-to-talk, then I guess you can set it for Vox. And it's a transceiver. It's a transmitter-receiver. As long as you stay in contact with the other Bluetooth device, you don't need a wire between you and the radio.
Well, this particular product, you look at it, it's a substitute. You can use it instead of wires, you know, to the computer for FT8. I want to experiment with FT8. First, I'm going to try it on my Apple Mac, and then I'm going to try it on a PC.
Okay, that certainly is a possibility. Now, in the past, there have been some incompatibility problems because all Bluetooths are not created equal. There are a whole bunch of what they call protocols. And if the chip and the software drivers are both for the same protocol, you can get them to work fine. I have devices that will not link to my PC. They will link to a headset, but they will not link to a PC. And that's because there's a problem between the available protocols. So although it's likely you'll be able to do that, it's not 100%. Nothing is in the world of Bluetooth. But I've seen less problems like this as the generations have progressed.
Yes, but the Apple computer I'm using is very, very minimal Bluetooth. The Apple computer is almost 10 years old, and the system software is pretty recent, and the Windows 10 machine is, you know, it's pretty old, very basic old. So the Bluetooth in it is probably primitive.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's more than likely. So you're not going to definitively know if it's going to work unless and until you try it out. And then you're kind of stuck. So this is almost no manufacturer lists all the important aspects of Bluetooth. So unfortunately, it's like wireless chargers. There are some wireless chargers that theoretically should charge your product. I have a bunch of them that don't. And it's not because they're broken, but just because there's an incompatibility with generations and protocols and all kinds of fun stuff. So although there's a chance that this will work and you'll be able to get your signal from your radio to your computer, I don't know. I'm not the most optimistic human being in the world, so I would probably place the probability at 50-50, given that at least your Apple is at least 10 years old, so that's a lot of generations of Bluetooth ago.
QSL. And what about a driver? Does the WSJT-X software have a driver installed in it, or do I have to add another piece of software?
It does not require a driver per se on its side. What it will do is it will request either hardware audio driver from your sound card or a virtual audio driver that might be third party from some plug-in. But the WSJT-X doesn't have its own driver. When you start it up, it'll say, okay, where do I get the audio from? And you'll have to connect to an audio driver that's listed on your computer. And you get there, again, either from a hardware sound card or a USB plug-in with a driver or, you know, some kind of virtual driver sometimes. But you'll have to provide your own, from whatever source you're planning to use as the driver. The WSJT doesn't have its own drivers.
QSL. For the WSJT, I downloaded the software. I opened up the folder. There was instructions for me that I had to do some kind of typing of characters into terminal. But then I realized that the plist file, I can't just put it in the folder. So I'll put the plist file into the folder and it works.
Okay, I don't have any experience installing it in an Apple product. I have installed it in a few PCs, and it, you know, once you get it hooked up right and working right, the one thing that I always try and caution people is that the timing is incredibly important. Approximate times break these protocols. So make sure that you synchronize your time clock in your computer with a known national standard before you attempt to use any of these digital algorithms, because they are incredibly time sensitive.
Would a UTC clock qualify?
Yes, if you, well, it depends upon the clock. The problem is it has to be synchronized to the worldwide time standard. So if you type into your browser what time is it or something like that, it'll tell you whether your system is in sync with the rest of the world or X number of minutes fast or slow, and you have to synchronize. So a lot of operating systems have a built-in applet that synchronizes with a national standard over the internet. But there are other third-party software that run in the background and get the time synchronized at regular intervals. But you're going to need to have your computer giving you the accurate time within the second. Otherwise, because all of these digital modes are synchronized on the top of the hour or the top of the minute, and if you're 5 seconds fast or slow, it won't understand what's going on and read it as noise or no signal.
QSL. Well, here it says date, time. Apple America's U.S. time.apple.com. And then there's a clock. This is the exact time. And that's the same as the clock on the upper right hand corner of the computer. Yeah, I think it's synchronized.
Okay. Some are, some aren't. Some are better than others, unfortunately. But that's one thing that when people have problems, it tends to be that they've allowed their PCs to kind of go a little slow or a little fast, and they wonder, you know, they've hooked up all the virtual devices, it's getting a signal in, but for some odd reason it's not synchronizing. So if it seems like your computer is doing proper time synchronization, then you shouldn't have a problem as far as that's concerned.
I'm looking here. Synchronized time, Apple, iMac, from the Apple menu, blah, 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 blah. How do I get, does Apple Mac use NTP? What is NTP?
I think that's Network Time Protocol. It's the way that networks synchronize each other.
Yeah, earlier operating systems have that. I think I'm okay. I use the OS Catalina. I know it's not the latest operating system, but, you know, it's the latest operating system this computer can run.
Okay. I mean, ultimately, I forget the name. I wish I knew it, but there is an actual name for a nice website that just comes on and says either you're in sync or it says you're a minute and 23 seconds fast or slow or what have you. So If you just kind of type into Google, you know, what time is it, eventually you'll find an application that gives you a very, very accurate time.
WS2N.
Yeah, Paul, someone in the chat room mentioned time.gov. Paul, do you have a better place to find that information?
I just put in UTC time into the computer. The first one that pops up every time. It's right on the money. But if you look to the second on the, you know,